We'll just recap a little bit. We've done chapter 14. Yep. And we started on 15. Yep. So we just sort of bridge the gap. Get a bit of a direction as to how we're going to go over the next year, what we're going to do, the speed, the pace that we're going to set. What we'll do is we're going to do the Unit 5 lessons up until, so there'll be this week, then the following week, and then the following week, all going to plan. Now, at that stage, I have a wedding on that day, but I'd still like to have the exam. I might get I might get someone else to facilitate for me. I'd like to have the exam still on the fourth week, the 19th of the second. And on that day, you'll also hand in the essays. Then we'll start the Unit 6 lessons on the 26th of the 2nd, and then the 5th of the 3rd. Now, as far as I understand, usually there's a long weekend or something, so on the 12th of the 3rd there may be a retreat. And then on the 19th of the 3rd, there's Gaur Panim. So there's a couple of weeks we missed there. So when we come back, I'd like to, you know, do the exam and your hand in the essays. So yes, 19th of Feb, you know. Hopefully we can sit an exam, and then the next one should be on the 26th of the 3rd. And in between that, you know, we should be... so, I won't go any more into the itinerary, just in case we don't get there, but let's see how we do. So, as we explained, that will be the basic, you know, every fourth week there should be an exam. So there'll be three lessons, and with the third lesson we're covering anything that we haven't got and doing a review. If we've got extra time, we can do more activities. We'll do some activities, but we'll do more activities. And like that. These are the times where I've got breaks. Basically on the, as I said, the 12th of the 3rd, there's usually a retreat that weekend. 19th of the 3rd, Gaur Panim. 23rd of the 4th, there may be an Easter retreat and some holidays. Eleventh of the 6th, there's probably a retreat then. Ninth of the 7th, there's a question mark on that one. 13th of the 8th, Balaram's appearance day. So there'll be a break. 29th of the 10th, I've left open in case they claim Diwali on that day rather than on the day it appears, which is during the week. And, you know, I'm hoping to sort of finish up somewhere around about the 12th or the 11th. But I'm keeping open if Obviously, I'd like to finish Canto 3 this year. So I'd like to finish around about the 12th or 11th, but if we haven't quite finished, then we may do 1 or 2 weeks up to about the 26th at the absolute latest, if that's possible. So they're the breaks, and just, you know, the pattern will be three lessons exam. It's very important you keep up. It won't be like last year. If I find though that you know, it's somehow or another, it's you're not able to keep up or what have you, then we'll have to slow down. But as I said, if you get the sort of pattern of what we're doing, it shouldn't be too difficult. You know, half an hour to read at least the translations, become familiar with the questions, and then again before coming to class, just read the questions again, you know, and the essay questions, and then be attentive in class that all the answers are, you know, right there, and make sure you're taking the notes. And as soon as we've covered the information for one of the essay questions, you should be able to recognise that and very quickly write out the skeleton of your essay. Or write, you know, almost the whole thing, you know, and edited it later or something. So let's have a look at the open book questions. Here, there are three questions. The first one, you can choose either A or B. I'll go to question two. The reason I'm going to question two and question three is because these questions actually relate to the session that we're doing now. So you see, it's a preaching application. Part A is draw lessons applicable for preaching from Maharaj Yudhisthira's retirement. Now that's from chapter 15, text 37 to 40, which we will cover next week. And then part B, describe the connection between Brahminical culture and cow protection. That'll actually be covered next week. Question 1, part A, will be covered next week. Discuss a devotee's attitude towards suffering with reference to the response of Dharma. How can you personally apply these principles? So we'll be covering up to the end of chapter 17. And also, mood and mission, part A of the question 3 will be covered next week. Explain how the age of Kali was able to enter with reference to chapter 15, text 32 to 37. The second part is chapter 19, which we'll cover later. So next week, during the lesson and after the lesson, you should have the skeleton of the essays. And you don't have to do all of those. You see, question 1 and question 2, you have to choose either A or B. It's important that you're familiar with them. That's the key. So as far as, you know, just a very deep study in detail of each and every purport, you've got a whole lifetime to do that. But having done the full Bhakti Shastri, full Bhakti Vaibhava, you know, as you're going through those purports, you've got all the skills to be able to really, you know, read them with good reading skills and to assimilate the knowledge, assimilate important points and apply those, you know. You don't necessarily have to be a scholar in each and every purport to be a Bhakti Vaibhava at this stage. You know? You can do that later. You remember in the beginning that some of the students were saying how they were finding it difficult to get past one or two purports because so much information, you know, in just one or two purports, and then come to the class and we may be doing a whole chapter which they're not familiar with any of it because they struggled through one or two purports. It's better to do it the other way. Let's get a real firm understanding of the skeleton and, you know, the real crucial main points and Prabhupada's preaching emphasis and how things were applied. And all the little details will, you know, when you've got plenty of time, you can do that with those skills. So let's have a look at just a review of chapters 14 and 15. Yeah. We start off that Yudhishthira had asked Arjuna to go to his No, I put it on. I'll put it on again, but once we went, about the time we were talking about the essay questions. I may have forgot to put this on. That's not there. Maharaj Yudhisthira sent Arjun to Dwarka to meet his friends and to learn about the program of Lord Sri Krishna. They, of course, would have had some inkling that Krishna was about to leave the planet. And we know that Gandhari had, you know, offered a curse. That 36 years from now, 36 years from the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna's own dynasty would be annihilated and Krishna himself would leave in some difficult way. So they understood that Gandhari's curse, you know, was now due, and that therefore the time was coming. Of course, they may have wanted to see if there's any possibility, knowing that Krishna is God, that he could even counteract the curse. He didn't have to, you know, go along with it. And on the other hand, it may be true that he's winding up his pastimes. We know that previously Narada Muni had mentioned to the Pandavas, I think at the end of chapter 13, that you know, you remain here as long as Krishna, you know, is here. Sort of giving the clue that, you know, when Krishna winds up his pastimes, you might also wind up your pastime, your you know, assisting the Lord in that way. So they wanted to know what Krishna's next plan of work was, and of course it had been about 7 months and Arjuna hadn't returned. So this of course is the link between chapters 13 and 14. You know, which sort of answers the, you know, the second question in our Purva Svadvayak questions. You know, why was Arjuna sent to Dwarka, of course? And that question is important in essence, it does link the previous chapters. You see, it takes 50 of chapter 13. Says that Narada is saying the Lord has already performed his duties to help the demigods. Now you Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. Okay, so there's the link between the previous chapter. So and of course we can also understand that, you know, Arjuna, according to the Mahabharata, he would have, if Krishna was leaving, he would have just wanted to see him one last time anyway. That's a little bit from the Mahabharata, but from the Srimad Bhagavatam, what would you summarize as the reason why Arjuna was sent to Dwarka? Yeah, what his next program of work was, yeah, what he's about to do, that's right. Yeah. You know, in essence, it sort of anticipates the question, which is also there in the verse, is he going to quit his earthly pastimes? What is he going to do? And probably a little bit more specific, is he going to quit his earthly pastimes? That's really what they're assuming that he may do, and they really want to know. And that's in the purport, so sort of two parts to that. Now, because in our textbooks, student handbooks, and that we have a summary of chapters 14 and 15. I'll just go over that quickly. We see that in chapter 14, we did discuss some of this in previous classes, so I'll just give a summary of it here. Inauspicious omens were seen by Yudhisthira Maharaj, and you know, in essence, they're anticipating the departure of Krishna's earthly pastimes. And within that, Krishna's departure is actually explained in text number 8. That Krishna left his so-called material body in the material world. Just as he left his Virat Rupa in the material world. Prabhupada explains in the 15th chapter, in text number 32, that his departure is like the sun. Because we have discussed this at length, but these are some of the summary points. And Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, in Prabhupada quotes, we can see that Krishna plays something like that so that they will be more convinced that Krishna is not God. So he literally, these are the different points. He actually did leave what appeared to be a material body, Krishna doesn't have a material body, but he literally created his pastimes in such a way that, for atheists who want to believe that God is a material person, that, you know, he actually left them some evidence. So that was his actual disappearance is more like the sun. The sun appears and disappears of its own accord, at any place without disturbing its presence in other places. So there's a very nice description there in the purport of text 32, chapter 15. So in text 32 and chapter 15, we're seeing the actual nature of Krishna's disappearance and appearance. And then in chapter 14, and in that quote we mentioned, we're seeing the nature of Krishna's apparent departure, which is meant for, you know, atheists and what have you. So Arjuna returned from Dwarka, and Yudhisthira questioned him about the welfare of the Yadus and his dejected countenance. And then Yudhisthira concluded that Lord Krishna has disappeared. In chapter 15, Arjuna explains that Krishna is now lost to him, so Arjuna confirms it. And he begins to discuss different incidents in which Krishna empowered and protected him and the Pandavas. Arjuna also spoke about the intimacy of his relationship with Krishna, and describes that in Krishna's absence that he's actually lost his powers. He also related the news of the destruction of the Yadus, and feeling, you know, very grief-stricken, he remembered the instructions of the Gita. And in the last part of chapter 15, we see how Yudhisthira and Kunti decide to retire, means to leave this earth. And therefore, Yudhisthira, seeing that the Kali has entered, he enthroned Parikshit Maharaj. And the Pandavas, seeing that Kali had arrived, followed Yudhisthira. And they attained the abode of the Lord Sri Krishna in their very same bodies. All of this together, of course, we can understand that if we go way back to the questions of the sages at Naimisharanya, they asked Sudha Goswami, will you please explain about the activities and birth of Parikshit Maharaj, and previously also they had asked about the nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Sudha Goswami was explaining the glories of the Bhagavatam by describing the different speakers of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the different speakers and hearers. We can understand how glorious is the Srimad Bhagavatam when such a person as Sukadeva Goswami is speaking it, and Parikshit Maharaj has given up his entire kingdom to sit and listen to it. So it really just gives, you know, what is this wonderful literature that, you know, and all the great sages have, you know, come to hear. So this is sort of in order to get that picture of the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in fact, we're building up a picture of who Parikshit Maharaj is, how great and glorious he was as a devotee, and how such a great personality came to give up everything and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, and how Sukadeva Goswami, and how, you know, Vyasadeva wrote. So this is all leading way back to those questions. These are all connected. Of course, trying to understand that how Parikshit Maharaj became enthroned by Yudhisthira Maharaj, we have to understand what events led to, you know, to Parikshit Maharaj becoming the king. Because just prior to that, Dhritarashtra was king. So what happened to Dhritarashtra? You know, he was like a puppet king. So we hear that, therefore we had to talk about Vidura. Vidura came back and spoke to Dhritarashtra, and then Dhritarashtra. So we had to hear about Dhritarashtra, and then Arjuna returned and told Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas, Krishna departed, so they all left the scene. So therefore that leads to the point of Maharaj Parikshit becoming the king. And then gradually we hear about his activities, which is the question, what are his activities? So we have to understand how he became the king, and then his activities as a king in dealing with the age of Kali. And then, of course, finally we get to the point of how he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, which goes way back to the original question as to, you know, the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is sort of linking why we're hearing these chapters in this order. Alright, so... So then we very briefly, we looked at some of the anomalies in human society, that disruptions in the seasonal regularities and what have you, the cheating even between friends, misunderstandings between fathers and mothers and everyone like that, and these things becoming very rampant. And of course, that's question one of the of our chapter 14 questions about those anomalies, disruptions in the seasonal regularities, people becoming very greedy, angry, and deceitful, and adopting foul means of livelihood. You know, cheating even between friends, even between husband and wife, there was always strain and quarrel. So that's the very nature of Kali Yuga. That's common, that's normal now. Now it's unusual if there's not strain between husband and wife. That's unusual. That's very rare. Discuss those things which are commonly seen. There's something else. So then... there's some of the things from verses 2 to 5, but in verses 10 to 20 there were also some anomalies in human society which were seen by Yudhisthira, and then he described a whole lot of different omens. In particular, one is singled out, you know, that when a man's body, thighs, arms and eyes are all quivering constantly, what must one know? That we see here that Yudhisthira said the left side of my body, etc., are quivering, and this indicates undesirable happenings. So for the men, the left side, and of course for the women, the right side, because when there's quivering or twinkling of the, you know, sometimes the eyelashes sort of, you get a little flutter in the eyelash or eyebrows. For a woman, that's auspicious on the left side. So those things were discussed there. Now, of course, the reason Yudhisthira Maharaj is pointing out all these things is because it's suggesting to him that he's discussing with Bhima, and it's suggesting to him, of course, that Krishna is about to depart. They're wondering, why has Arjuna not come back? And Yudhisthira is mentioning all these things, you know. He's leading up ultimately to a statement that perhaps Krishna is, you know, either left or leaving. Now there are some questions there which are not very difficult to find the answers for, about Balaram and how many family members does Krishna have. We won't go over those too much. and the necessities, what two necessities are required for society to prosper is cow protection and brahminical qualities. So there's some questions there, not very difficult to understand. They're all from chapter 14. it can. So it really takes us into chapter 15. We see at the very end that Yudhisthira, in text number 44, as we described, Arjun did return. Yudhisthira inquired about the Yadus. He also inquired why Arjun appeared to be so dejected. Arjun practically couldn't speak at all. And then Yudhisthira says, "Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjun, I can think of no other reason for your becoming so dejected." So in that last verse, he actually states what he thought all along. So then we come to chapter 15, which deals principally with Arjuna's statements to Yudhisthira. We see that he had a friendship with Lord Krishna. And the Lord made that relationship perfect in different ways, as a well-wisher, a benefactor. The Lord tied him into a family relationship, you know, by arranging Subhadra's marriage with him. The Lord agreed to become a chariot driver of Arjuna in order to protect his friend. And the Lord became actually happy when he established the Pandavas to rule the world. It's interesting, the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on that. So he describes four different types of friends. There's Sakyam, Maitram, is it three? And Suriram. Yeah. That Sakyam is mutual affection and mutual helping each other, where Maitram is Sakya mixed with Dasya, a little bit of servitorship. And Suridam is a type of friendship where it's Sakyam mixed with Vatsalya, or parental, or, you know, like a guardian. So if we take these statements here, we can see that where the Lord became the chariot driver of Arjuna, that would be what? Maitram, which is sort of that friendship mixed with a little bit of servitorship or dasya. The Lord became actually happy when he established the Pandavas to rule over the world. I would say that it would be Maitram. And Sakyam, mutual affection and mutual helping each other. So he was a well-wisher and benefactor. So he was sort of affectionately helping Arjuna, and perhaps even tying him into a family relationship with Subhadra. So he helped him to get a nice wife as well, knowing that his sister was more than qualified. So it sort of really helped him in a very friendly way. And of course Arjun was like to help Krishna as well, in a mutual way. Sakyam, well, you know, would is yeah, Sakyam is mutual affection and mutual helping each other. So it's affection, but there's a practical side to it. Yes, I like you, but I'm not going to do anything for you. It's Sakyam is like they're actually doing things, reciprocating, giving, receiving, in a practical way. Prabhupada gives a nice example. He arranged a nice wife. That's a very practical way of doing something. Yes. He's actually offering some service, which is he drove Arjuna's chariot. In one sense, Maitram, you know, has a little bit of guardian or parental, so protecting Arjuna can be part of that as well, the Maitram, and establishing the Pandavas to rule the world. In one sense, I take that as Maitram. Which one? Saridam. That's the one mixed with Vatsalya. So I'll say it again. I said Maitram instead of Saridam. Sakyam, we've got as a well-wisher, benefactor, tying, you know, him into a family relationship. The Maitram, the servitorship, is acting as a chariot driver of Arjuna. He's offering a service. But at the same time, there is the Suryadam, which is protective, protecting his friend, and in a sense also, you know, very happy to see that he was established, the Pandavas, to rule the world, just like a parent likes to see their, you know, they guide their children to success, you know, to be nicely well situated in the world, in one sense. So protecting and establishing him nicely in his career and his calling. But, you know, we don't have to get technical in the answer. Mostly we just take it from the Srimad Bhagavatam, but just a little extra understanding is good to know. Three. I thought there's four. I see three. Sakyam, Maitram, and Suryadam. There may be another, but it's not mentioned here. Who gave those? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah, in his commentary, you can there in the. Do you have? Are you looking at them? No? Do you have? No, I got. I must have them. You can get them in book form, but they're on the computer. I'm just trying to work out where I. They might be like in my notes by which I derived these books. I've got those as part of the commentaries. So I was just wondering whether they're not in the students. Okay. What? Yeah, I don't. They probably wouldn't have supplied them to the student. Yeah. It's very helpful, you know, as for the teacher. Like I go through whatever notes I can by the various acharyas. I read Bhurijan's, you know, sections on this Bhurijan Prabhu, and I read any other section of the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita that happens to be related to these things, so that just try and get a clear overall understanding. So then there's many examples of, you know, the Lord showing favour to Arjuna and the Pandavas, which is another one of the Purva Svadvaya questions for, you know, chapter 15. We've just answered one, the first one, this, and then question number three asks us to look at some of the those. So would someone like to describe some of those examples from verses 7 to 18? Examples of the Lord showing favour to Arjuna and the Pandavas? Yes, he. Yep, he pierced the fish target. Vanquished all the lusty princes assembled at the place of Jupiter. That was in the same Svayamvara ceremony for Draupadi. And Arjun conquered Indra and various associates to enable the fire god to devastate the Kandava forest. And Arjun was able to save the Maya demon as well from the Kandava forest by conquering Indra and his associates. Krishna gave him hints about how to kill Jarasandha. Of course, we can see that the Battle of Kurukshetra was fought. And Krishna allowed Arjun to destroy all those enemies who insulted his wife, Draupadi. And we see how when Devasa Muni arrived and with his 10,000 disciples, and yet they were all fed sumptuously because Krishna was actually, I think Krishna was, where was he at that stage? He was, I don't think he was in Dwarka, was it Dwarka? I think he was in Dwarka or something. He just, you know, he just appeared. He just understood that they were in trouble. He just sort of, you know, walked out of the forest or something, you know. I'm here. So, but, you know, he was, similarly, you know, when we see with Draupadi, you know, being disrobed, Krishna just, you know, helped her. He was in a different city. So in so many different ways, he just was there. And of course, practically in all the different great successes of Arjuna and the Pandavas, it was Krishna who played the hand that made it a success. So those verses through 7 through 18, though, describe many such examples. And, you know, you really just have to, I guess, understand the examples as we've just done then, just to, you know, to be able to name the story or the pastime. And then, you know, if you know, from where something is mentioned in the purports which specifically show Krishna's hand in that pastime, it's good to know that, you know, how Krishna himself played that vital role in that pastime to really favour Arjuna and the Pandavas. It says there, list examples, Purva Swadhyaya, question 3, it doesn't say how many examples to list. And I imagine, you know, if questions like that ended up in the test, you'd probably only have to know a couple. You wouldn't have to know them all off by heart, sort of thing. Now we see that Arjuna was able to astonish Lord Shiva, and he was able to go to the heavenly planets in his very same body, like that. The example of when they picked a quarrel, the Kauravas picked a quarrel with King Virata and took away a large number of cows, that Arjuna was able to fight with them incognito and regain those cows along with some booty taken by force. And of course, as he mentioned in the verse 16, that you know, practically all the great warriors like Drona, Karna, Bhishma, they couldn't even touch a hair on Arjuna's head, let alone kill him. And that was certainly the grace of the Lord. So then there's a very mysterious part here of the Bhagavatam, or, you know, I remember reading this 32 years ago, and you know, it always astounded me how Arjuna could actually lose his powers. You know, I remember reading this, and I think sometimes it would come to my mind, you know, as I might have been talking with people at a Sunday feast or what have you, but I was never game to say it. You know, Arjuna lost his power, because I couldn't quite conceive of how, you know, Krishna, I could never understand how Krishna took away his powers. You know, it took me, even though it's sort of there, but couldn't quite relate to it for a long time. Especially we see, you know, so many, when you hear, you know, everyone knows of Arjuna as this great, powerful warrior on the battlefield, and of course, you know, to come to that point where, you know, just sort of a band of so-called robbers are able to prevent him from protecting, you know, Krishna's wives. Now, in verses 8, the purport to chapter 14, verses 8 to 9, we see that Krishna, Prabhupada has mentioned that without the sanction of the Lord, that, you know, if one could achieve success without the sanction of the Lord, then no medical practitioner would fail to cure a patient. So this is one of the Purva Svadhyaya questions from chapter 14, but it comes up actually in this part of the discussion, along with some of the things we're discussing here in chapter 15, that you know, it's an example that Prabhupada gives for the necessity of having the Lord's sanction and achieving success. And the example is that if you could achieve success without the sanction of the Lord, then no medical practitioner would fail to cure a patient. So that's a very nice example. And of course, you know, he just summarizes that any successful man should feel grateful to the Lord for all he has achieved, because we understand, you know, that we are, we do need the Lord's sanction for success, and therefore we should be grateful for whatever we've achieved or successful in, because that means the Lord has sanctioned it, therefore we should be grateful to the Lord. You know, Prabhupada used to, in this regard, Prabhupada used to also discuss about, I don't know if it's one of the quotes, no, I don't think it is, but Vivekananda, he gave a speech when he came to America, and Vivekananda actually said to the people, of course a lot of people in America were Christian by background, He said, you're working so hard, why are you giving the credit to God? That was his philosophy. It's a recorded speech. You can actually look it up, I think. So that, you know, a lot of them become very angry with him. So when they become angry with him, you know, his response was, you know, why giving so much credit to God? You are God. You know, we are all God. That was his philosophy. And of course, coming in the Ramakrishna mission. Now, as far as I understand, that is in that same line of Vivekananda, yeah. And you know, their philosophy, of course, is Dirija Narayan, that God is, you know, that God is, everyone is God. So you know, why worship God within the temples? You know, just worship the poor man because he's also God. And you know, of course, Prabhupada counteracts that. Then you know, God is the husband of the goddess of fortune. So how could he be poor man? So the poor man is God. Then why do we call him Madhava? You know, Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune. That Prabhupada says, you know, that Narayan never becomes a dog. So, anyway, so it's a simple philosophy here that, you know, as a devotee, as Shruti Kirti was saying the other day, Krishna consciousness is so simple that you can miss it. You know, here, a very simple statement that everyone should feel grateful because we all, you know, depend upon the sanction of God for success. So it's not a difficult philosophical thing. You know, even a little child, you can tell them that, you know, they've done something good, and they say, oh, God's given you a blessing, you know, otherwise you couldn't do it. And they can, you know, 5 years old, three or four, they can understand. Here are these great philosophers, you know, who come and, you know, studied philosophy for many, many lifetimes, and they cannot understand this. So, you know, what, you know, why you worship God? You are God. You don't need to search out the sanction of God in the temple. So, therefore, don't go to the temple. Don't worship Him. You don't have to worship Krishna. You don't have to worship, you know, the God of the Christians or the God of the Muslims. You are God. So they cannot understand. So we see that you do need God's sanction. So that comes up there in the 14th chapter, and then here again in the 15th chapter with regard to Arjun being defeated by some infidel cowherd men. So this is an unusual pastime. Now, if we were to ask, how were these cowherd men able to defeat Arjun? So there's a nice little story there mentioned in the purport to text number 20. How some of the demigods, the wives of the daughters of the demigods, laughed at the movement of this Astavakra Muni, who was curved in eight joints. So he moved in a funny way. Maybe we should, that could be one of our activities. We could role play this one. Who wants to be Astavakra Muni? So anyway, he cursed them that they would be kidnapped by rogues. So then they satisfied that Muni, and he blessed them that, you know, they would regain their husband even after being robbed by the rogues. So it describes it that the Lord himself kidnapped his wives from the protection of Arjuna. So that's how the cowherd men were able to defeat Arjuna because it was Krishna himself. Otherwise, you know, they, as it described, they would have, it says they would have at once vanished from the scene as soon as they were touched by the rogues, you know, the wives there. Without Krishna's sanction, no one can be successful like that. Now, there's an interesting point down the bottom here that besides that, some of the gopis who prayed to become wives of the Lord returned to their respective positions after their desire was fulfilled. After the departure of Lord Krishna, he wanted all his entourage back to Godhead, and they were called back under different conditions only. So, some of the gopis, they prayed to become the wives of the Lord, and they returned to their respective positions. So, again, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are some prayers. Now, I think they're the prayers of the 16,100, not the eight principal wives, but the 16,100 who were captured by Bhaumasura and hidden in caves, and Krishna delivered them. And after delivering them, they offered prayers headed by Rohini, who was the chief of the 16,100 wives. And in one of her prayers, which I think is one of the last prayers, she describes how they want the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna, just as the gopis in Vrindavan, you know, have that dust. There's some verse to that degree. And in there, we're seeing that they're actually aspiring for the position to be gopis. So, where it's saying here that some of them, you know, were formerly gopis, as describing, and that they're actually returning to that position as gopis. So they ultimately, you know, ended up back in Vrindavan, and they, you know, didn't want to be the eternal relationship with Krishna as queens, but as gopis. So, you know, that's sort of what it's saying there. So therefore we see that, you know, sometimes in Krishna's pastimes there are changes in rasa. You know, like sometimes, you know, we hear our relationship with Krishna is, you know, eternal, which it is. And sometimes people ask the question, can we change our rasa? So this is another, it mentions in the Nectar Devotion, of course, that we can. It's very unlikely. You know, usually there's no need because everyone is satisfied in their eternal relationship with Krishna. And here we see that there is some moving from the position of being Krishna's queen to the position of being a gopi in Vrindavan. You know, that's sort of what the, so if you want to look more at that, you can look at that Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur's commentary to this verse and his commentary to the verse in question in chapter canto 10 somewhere way up in the 70 or 80 this chapter there.
70.
No, it's no, more like 70 or 80. Let's see if I've. I have another file where, as I go through these, I put all these discussions. So I have a document on the 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this first canto here, and all of that information I put, you know, in my own documents. I've got it there. If you have interest, we can look at that one time. But I'm not sure. You can buy them up in the shop. Yeah. A vision of Chakravarti Thakura's commentary to that. He has, book one is canto one and two. There's book two. I think there's about four books. I think so far they're up to about, I've seen up to canto five. I think there's maybe three or four books. And that's the commentaries all the way up to canto five. It's one of the things they need to do in the shop, which I've noticed, is that they sometimes, you know, by sections of a set of books, because I don't think the people who order the books know that there's a whole, you know, it's like that they might buy four of a set of nine or something, you know. Yeah, really, for me, you know, it's a bit annoying. But anyway, and then what happens, of course, the other books come out, they don't tend to order them in, so, you know, if they're a slow seller, they won't, for the people who have got three volumes at home and need the next three or four, they don't often order them in if they're a slow seller. I know, but you do. Any questions or comments on that? Yeah. So, you know, that last part of the purport, it's a little difficult to understand. It's a little cryptic in one sense. Sometimes Prabhupada hints at something which, you know, he doesn't express at all, but he's sort of letting you know there's something more to this. I'll give you the gist of it. You're going to have to look it up, you know. So that's one of those examples.
That means that the queens who wanted to become the gopis, they returned to their original position and then, or they went straight to the spiritual world.
Yeah, look, it's saying here that some of the gopis who prayed to become wives of the Lord, so some were gopis who prayed to become wives, so they become wives, and then they returned their respective position as gopis. So, not necessarily all of the 16,108. But there's a, you know, that's a full lecture just on that topic. There's a lot of different quotes from various places about who, you know, the who are the various queens. You know, we understand that generally amongst all of these various associates, some are those who have been elevated to the position of Nitya Siddha devotees. Now, what I tend to notice in Prabhupada's books is this, is that if someone, you know, perhaps someone who's become, they're in the material world and through devotional service they've become perfect, they're not necessarily a Nitya Siddha who's just come from the spiritual world for a pastime and going straight back. They've been here in a conditioned way and then gradually they've become perfect. But they become Nitya Siddhas. So in the descriptions of those Nitya Siddhas, they're sometimes just literally called, you know, Nitya Siddhas, or, you know, some statements just associate them with the other Nitya Siddhas. And it does not discriminate that they've only just come to that position. You know what I mean? So some statements in the Puranas and Prabhupada's purports and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, just associate them all as Nitya Siddhas. And then other parts of the stories reveal that some of them have just become Nitya Siddhas, you know. So it gets a little confusing as to there's quite a lengthy, detailed subject to sort out the different statements. You've got to be very careful. And that's why sometimes here Prabhupada just, he lets you know there's a little bit more to this. Comes up in the 10th canto and in the Acharya's commentaries, but certainly he's not going to go into it here. But he hasn't left it out. But it's not necessary for our understanding at this point. Any other questions or comments on that? So for this time we can just take it that yes, some of those gopis actually became queens, and then those queens again became gopis, and then others became queens for the first time, you know. In other words, some may have come to the position of becoming Krishna's wives from sadhana siddha, and then also become gopis along with the others, and some remain queens, especially the principal queens who are, you know, eternally satisfied in that position, such as Rukmini and what have you. Anyway, the main point we're getting there is that how did the cowherd men defeat Arjuna, and that is because Krishna kidnapped his wives. And Krishna did that, of course, for two reasons. One is for the curse, but Prabhupada's putting in there's another reason Krishna kidnapped them, and that is because he's actually winding up his pastimes and taking these persons back to the spiritual world and to re-establish them in their eternal relationship. So that's a second reason that Prabhupada is giving, but he's just hinting at it there. But the main reason, so there's one reason: Krishna kidnapped his wives. He did that to maintain the curse of the Muni, and two, to take them back to the spiritual world and put them in their places. So there's two reasons why Krishna kidnapped them. But all you need to know, in essence, is that Krishna kidnaps the wives from Arjuna, and that's why they were able to defeat him. That's the main thing that you really need to know. Now, why did Krishna withdraw Arjuna's special powers? What's that?
They're no longer needed for the
purpose. Yeah, yeah. And why were they not needed?
Because all the enemies were vanquished, and Krishna left the earth, so
the mission
was
fulfilled. Mission accomplished. Yeah, that's a fact, yeah. It's interesting here, Prabhupada calls them emergency powers. You know, nice way he just, you know, with one or two words, he just says so much. His mission was fulfilled. The emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna. They were no longer required. One, for the mission, and of course he gives another reason. They're not meant for going back to Godhead as well. So there's actually two reasons he's giving there. The Arjuna's powers are not necessary for a person to go back to Godhead. You don't have to fight your way back there with arrows and brute strength. Krishna will just come and pick you up, even if you're a little mouse, put you on a chariot and take you back to the spiritual world. That answers that question, but of course the important lesson there in that is that no one should be puffed up with his powers borrowed from the Lord. The Lord gives them and he can take them away at any that's an important lesson from this pastime. And therefore, Prabhupada gives that nice story about again become a mouse. You all know that story. Yeah. You know that story, Chris? Again become a mouse? When you're going through this, have a look at the quotes, Prabhupada's quotes, for the purport of chapter 15, text 21. And Prabhupada tells a, it's one, a little excerpt from his lecture there, and you can look that up. There's a couple of quotes there. There's another one in the, like this, by the grace of Krishna you have become, but if you forget Krishna, then again you are going to become, to be a mouse. Remember that no one will care for you. So what's that?
Arjuna never forgot about Krishna or the mercy of Krishna.
No. Arjuna didn't, but still, you know, Krishna is showing that everyone, Arjuna included, has borrowed their powers from Krishna. Yeah. So even if you're a person like Arjuna, you can't hang on to those powers. So if Arjuna can't go against the will of the Lord when he decides to withdraw the powers, no one else would even think about it. That's sort of why, you know, it's good to use Arjuna as a, in this example. In other words, if you took the powers off someone who wasn't significantly strong, someone who thought they were very powerful might think, oh, you might, Krishna, God might do that to that person, but he won't do it to me. And people do think like that, you know, strangely enough. Chapter 15, the purport to text 5. So it's, you know, so we sort of went backwards a little bit there. First, we explained how it was that Arjuna could be defeated, and that was from text 20, but then we went back to text 5 to look at why Arjuna's powers were taken. You see here, you know, in some cases we've actually selected some things from chapter 14 and grouped it with some statements made in chapter 15. Or, you know, we've gone back and forth a little bit between the verses because the points are around a similar theme. So that's a very handy skill to have, especially in writing essays on a theme. You know, it would be a mistake in one sense to just try to write an essay on a theme and just go verse by verse. You could, you know, there is a bit of backward and forward movement required. As we're seeing, you know, all these 19 chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam of the first canto are connected to the questions that were asked. It's not always apparent, you know, how they are connected. And in some chapters, either Sudha Goswami or Sukadeva Goswami will hint upon something which then he's got to leave for a little bit and come back to it later on. So then, you know, you've got to be able to connect that original hint with the further analysis later on as one topic. In essence, Guru Jan Prabhu does that to some degree in his, the book, Unveiling Krishna's Lotus Feet. You know, to some degree, he does that. And finally, of course, explain the transcendental acting of the Lord with a pure devotee like Arjuna. Might be just an extra question. I think it's just an extra question that they've put in here. It's an important topic of discussion. Yes, in verse 17 we see that 17, 18, 19 of the 15th chapter, that basically Krishna played in such a way that the devotee forgets, you know, that his friend, his son, etc., is the Supreme Lord. You know, that's the action of Krishna's internal potency. So that's the transcendental acting of the Lord with his pure devotee. We see that in verses 18 to 19, you know, Krishna remembers some of those very pleasing and beautiful ways that Krishna used to sit and joke and talk with him, you know, very frank and how Arjuna would, you know, minimize the Lord by sometimes speaking to him sarcastically or, you know, offering some... They would joke about each other's prowess, minimize each other's role in a certain event. So Arjuna was remembering the intimacy of his relationship with Krishna. So that pretty much wraps up what we're going to discuss today. So in the, you know, verses after that, Arjuna describes the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. And then he describes how he was able to become pacified in his heart, you know, by remembering the instructions of the Lord, remembering the Bhagavad Gita, which we'll take up a little bit more on that point next week. So next week we're really looking at, we'll just touch upon that, Arjuna's remembering, you know, the Lord, and we'll take up in that last section of the 15th chapter how Yudhisthira Maharaj decided to retire, followed by Kunti, enthroning Parikshit Maharaj like that, and then we'll look at the 16th and 17th chapters.
We're going to cover two lessons, though. Lesson 2 and lesson 3.
Yeah, we'll see how we go. We'll,
We need to come prepared for both the lessons.
What's that?
We need to come prepared for both the lessons.
Yes, if everyone can, as I say, read the translations, minimum, up to the end of 17, chapter 17. Be familiar with the Purva Svadhyaya questions up to there, and any essay questions which we read out, just to be aware of them, so that and you know, if you have time, go through as many purports as you can, of course, but that's sort of the minimum that you should have done, at least read all the translations and be familiar at least with the questions to do that, and then you'll find that within that lecture, within that session, we will have covered all those things, and you know, you'll be able to jot down the answers to the, you know, questions which will come up in exams, and you'll be able to walk out of there. You should have some sort of a skeleton statements, and when you get home that evening, just quickly put them in some sort of a quick form, you know, the basis of your essay, you know, which means that you've got the main points and the references. You know, that's your essay. If you can walk out of the class and you've got all the main points and the references, you've got an essay, you know. Very, very easy. So you don't necessarily have to write that essay then. If you do over the next couple of days, that's all well and good. But you should have at least that. If you have at least that for the various questions, then, you know, within 1 week, if you sat down on one day between after the lessons that we've finished discussing, the chapters that we're discussing, and then the next week you're going to have the exam, within that week you should easily be able to write those essays and refresh yourself on the Purva Svadhyaya questions, you know, if you've done that. There shouldn't be any difficulty. And then, you know, if there are, you know, above that, if you get time to read plenty of the purports or all of the purports, I read all of the purports, and you know, other writings, you know, by Charis and what have you connected, and so if you can read others, and then that's also good, because then if there are other things which come up that you might spark some other questions just for your general understanding, then, you know, we can also cover those things in class. But remember, we did discuss last year that we should try and keep our questions in such a way that they are related to our studies and be careful not to sidetrack myself or yourselves, you know, on questions that may really hold us up from the real goal of what we're trying to do. So we've got to be careful about that. But, you know, good questions related, you know, just so we're getting a proper understanding is good. Well, so we can pretty much leave it there, unless anyone else has anything they'd like to discuss, or everyone happy with that? Yeah. All right. Thank you. Hare Krishna.